I grew up in a challenging environment, and I think when you've been beaten down as a person, there is almost a belief that you can't get better because this is who you are, because you don't deserve to be happy.
How do you make peace with trauma? How do you make peace with your family?
It's a repetitive conversation in a therapy setting where a lot of people are hurting because of family issues. The big thing here is to appreciate that it's not you. It was actually Nick that got me interested in psychology, into therapy, because when we met, I was really broken. And he was very much of the attitude, there's nothing that can't be fixed, everybody can get better, we're all a product of our environment. And I'm like, however. Davina McCall had been to one of our mental health workshops. And I remember her telling me about the menopause, because unless you're going through it, you don't get it. But I've been through so many things in my life. And to think that my head had the darkest of thoughts, Debbie, is just like, it's alien to me. That's not my head. So I texted Davina and I went, I've never felt as bad. I just don't see a way out. I'm considering things I've never considered. And she just texted me back immediately. She just put, call me now.
The emotional consequences of our physical changes of women are just so enormous that that's why conversations like this really matter, because I think people need to see incredible role models like you actually being human and saying, that was my rock bottom and I didn't know what to do. You exemplify a support system, because I mean, not everyone could work with their husband for 20 years.
I know.
How do you do it?
I know. I think the reason that we work so well together is...
Welcome to Grit and Grace with me, Debbie Wasko. In this series, I'll be chatting to a whole host of incredible guests to discuss the unique challenges, triumphs, and transformative experiences that often define us as women in midlife. Through shared personal stories and advice, we're going to tackle some of the most important and relevant women's issues to date. I see this as more than just a podcast. It's a movement to change the narrative around midlife so that women see their second act as a time of opportunity, renewal, and excitement. So join me, Debbie Wasko, on this journey of grit and grace, sponsored by the Better Menopause, science-driven solutions for women in menopause. Today, I'm thrilled to have with us one half of a world-renowned therapeutic duo. Alongside her partner, Nick, she's dedicated her life to helping people overcome their trauma and transform their mental health using pioneering therapies. She's a mum, a resident therapist on a much-loved daytime TV show, an author and a fellow podcaster. Her journey to become one of the UK's most well-renowned psychotherapists is both inspiring and fascinating, and her unique style of therapy has helped to transform countless women's lives. I'm delighted to welcome to Grit and Grace, Eva Speakman. Eva, hello. Thank you for joining me in my living
room.
And Eva, you are one of the nation's best loved double acts, and definitely from a psychotherapist perspective. Talk to me a bit about how you got started.
Okay, so I grew up in a challenging environment, to say the least. And so I would be one of those people that you would never see in life, because I would try and hide away. And always knew that I wanted to help people, but didn't know in what manner. I come from quite a medical orientated family, and always wanted to help people, but wasn't sure quite what to do. And I just sort of fell into, of all things, banking. And there was a particular...
Famous for helping people.
Yeah, famous, yeah. And I just fell into it as a sort of like young 20-year-old, and wasn't really, sort of wanted a bit of time out, so was doing something different. And they trusted me with a company car. And this particular, one particular day, I parked my car on this car park, and went off to this meeting, came back and the car was gone. Now this was kind of pre-mobile phones really, and I just thought, oh my gosh, what am I gonna do? Now, what I really wanted to do was cry, go, oh my God, how do I fix this? What's gonna happen? But I felt like, I'm wearing a suit, I've got a briefcase, so I've got to pretend that I'm a responsible adult. And I went into this building to ask if I could use the phone. And in that building was Nick. and who I'd never met before, and he basically, he helped me to phone the police, to call my dad, and he was just so lovely that I took him for lunch a couple of weeks later to say thank you. There was nothing in it other than...
No romance,
just complete gratitude because he'd really helped me out. He was a complete stranger and he really helped me out. And it was actually Nick that got me interested in psychology, into therapy, because when we met, he'd already started, he'd already been studying, he was already on this journey, having been told 10 years previous that he was, you know, he wasn't going to live, he was going to die, and he didn't accept that. And so he went on this quest of understanding people, behaviour, thoughts, and then he introduced me into that same field. And being really honest with you, Debbie, some of the things that he would say to me, I was like, nah, I'm not really sure I get, I'm not really sure I believe all this therapy.
Because it felt woo-woo.
Yeah, it did feel woo-woo. And I would say that when I met him, I was really broken. And he was very much of the attitude, there's nothing that can't be fixed, everybody can get better, we're all a product of our environment, which means change your environment, you can change as a person, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And I'm like, nah, this doesn't wash with me. However, when I started to see my growth and change by really taking his lead and listening to his advice, I actually got to a point where I thought, I can't deny that this is actually true and it works. And I think when you've been beaten down as a person, which I was through childhood very much so, and through my late teens, and there is almost a belief that you can't get better because this is who you are, because you don't deserve to be happy. And that's where I was when I met Nick.
Talk to me about that. What was that like as a child, and what form did that take?
So I would say throughout my whole childhood, I was bullied, both by a family member, also when I went to school. And I guess I was a target, and because I was very quiet, I didn't like confrontation, and the reason being is that I witnessed a lot of domestic violence. I saw that, you know, you get slapped or you get hit or you get verbally abused and you keep your mouth shut because that's the way it goes. So consequently at school I was an easy target because if somebody were to say something unkind or negative, I wouldn't challenge that. And so I accepted it. And growing up, having been belittled, having been bullied, what you then grow into is this person who has an immense fear of judgment, that you feel that you don't deserve to be happy. You feel that for somebody to treat you so badly, knowing that you never would, that must mean that you really deserve that. So I would say I was an incredibly fragile person when I met Nick. On the outside, I probably appeared quite confident because I was literally blagging this, you know, I'd just got this job and I wanted to sort of blag that I had this confidence. But realistically, you're actually two people. There's the pretense that's got the smile on the face, and then there's the person that feels like they've been smashed into a million pieces and trying to go through life and be what everybody wants you to be.
How easy did you find it to open up to him about that?
I've got to say that opening up to Nick took a very long time, and now I speak about it and to some degree, it still upsets me because not because I feel in any way a victim, not because I have any regret. I must say that everything that's ever happened to me in my life, I'm grateful for, because I know that that's made me who I am today. It's made me a better person. It's made me compassionate. It's made me a better therapist. So I'm glad about that. But it was very difficult to open up about the fact that that you feel like you're worthless, to open up about the fact that you feel that you're a punching bag for the world and for anybody that crosses your path. And there's almost shame associated, and that was realistically why opening up was so difficult. Shame that people treated you that way. Guilt because this was, you know, I was so well provided for in my life, but there were definitely shortcomings in many ways on an emotional level. So, you know, but because, you know, you love your family, you don't want to say anything against them. So it's very difficult to sort of say, yeah, you know, this is where I've come from, this is who I am. But Nick quite soon saw for himself, you know, he's wise, and he saw things. And at first he would bring things up to me and I would jump on the defensive immediately. No, you've got it wrong, that isn't it. And one thing that actually I don't often speak about is the fact that when Nick and I got together, I totally sabotaged our relationship because for me, it was inevitable it was going to fall apart.
He was too everything good. Did.
Yeah, and he was too good for me, so in my eyes then. And so I was really challenging.
In what way?
He would say something nice, I would bark back, that couldn't be true. He would go out and I would assume that he'd be having an affair and cheating on me. I would antagonise him and argue with him because you're not physically hitting me, so there's something not right here. I've grown up believing, you know, that in a relationship there's violence in some regard, and why, you know, this isn't happening. And of course I didn't want that to happen, but I was sort of in this sort of habitual conditioned behaviour of this is how you behave. So I was really quite difficult, and very slowly over time Nick was pointing things out to me, and despite the fact that at first I wasn't prepared to listen, it obviously started to go in. And I would say that when you've had so much crap thrown at you over the years, you literally no longer are able to see what's in front of you. And it was like Nick just got a little speck and he cleared that bit and then he cleaned that bit. And then slowly, I was able to see the world for what it was, the people around me for what they were, myself for who I am, and I would say that the windscreen is now clean.
So training and moving from, I'm a mini banker who's had their car stolen and met someone who blah blah blah, all of that.
Yes.
To being the accomplished expert that you are now, where people rely on you for expertise, information, and advice. How do you get there from where you were that young woman in the car park?
Self-growth, really practicing what I preach. So it was about understanding that, you know, I genuinely believe that nobody's born bad. People behave badly because of bad things that happen in their life. That consequently made me realise that I wasn't bullied because I was Eve Speakman. I was bullied because I was around somebody else who was hurting and they lashed out at
me. Hurt people.
Yeah, exactly. So knowing that, suddenly that empowers you because you're not dragging them around. You're not dragging their words from the past and their actions. You can let that go. And talking through situations that I'd found particularly traumatic in my life, and again, and this is part of what our therapy is based on, our perception. We only see the world how we see it through our eyes, based upon our life experience, our conditioning. And so being able to actually change perspective in a positive way on things that had happened in my life, and realizing that actually I'd survived those things and I got through them, and also using all these negative things as a positive component of my therapeutic toolbox, because I can sit down with somebody and really empathize on their journey. you know, whether they have been bullied, whether they've been assaulted, whether they've been sort of verbally abused, eating disorders, phobias, anxieties, panic attacks. Because I've lived through those myself, and I've got through them and throughout the other side, that I feel has been such a benefit and a bonus to me as a therapist. So I'm incredibly grateful for my entire life, every part of it.
So grit and grace is the theme of the podcast, and it seems to me that you absolutely exemplify all of that in your life. But how do you make peace with trauma? How do you make peace with your family? Asking for a friend, but you know.
Okay, so it's funny actually, because it's a repetitive conversation in a therapy setting where a lot of people are hurting because of family issues. And I think that the big thing here is to appreciate that it's not you. I think you've got to take that personalization out of it and understand that, you know, depending on which child you are when you were born, you know, so you might be the firstborn, and then as a little one, you've got another brother or sister that comes on the scene. And you as a 3 or 4 year old might go, well, why wasn't I good enough? Why do they need another one? And if you never address that, you could literally live your life until you address it, going, oh, you know, I don't feel as good as them, so I need to do things to make myself look better. I need to push them down to make myself look taller. So I think that part of that is understanding it's not personal. Understanding human behaviour really helps. And I think, and this is probably the most challenging, is that understanding there's only one person that is with you 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, and all your life, and that is you. And it is your responsibility to make sure that you are around people that make you feel good. And the bit that I alluded to about being incredibly difficult is that you do have to have boundaries and be able to say, no, that's not acceptable. You have to be able to say, I'm sorry, but unless, you know, you are great as you are, if you're happy with as you are, that's fine. But I can't cope with it, so, you know, I've got to walk away from this relationship. And that was the toughest thing for me, because I did walk away for many years, and I did feel quite guilty to some members of my family who were collateral damage, really. But you do have to get to a point where you have to walk away. You know, there's only you that's with you 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, all your life. And I like to think of wherever we are as being our soil that helps us to grow. And if we nourish our soil, you know, through things like practicing gratitude, being around nice people, having goals, setting ourselves goals, then you will grow and grow well. Whereas if we remain planted around weeds and rocks and people that want to sort of shade our sunlight, then that's going to suppress our growth. And we are all as individuals entitled to that same growth, the same amount of growth. But we have to take responsibility in where we plant ourselves.
Talk to me about midlife and being a woman in midlife and all of those really important principles, then having a load of hormones chucked at them in terms of perimenopause and menopause, and how that's been for you.
I feel that I've had such a sort of turbulent journey with perimenopause. So I knew very little about menopause, perimenopause. In fact, if I'm honest, I don't really even think that perimenopause was a word that I'd ever used until it happened to me. And even when they told me, I was like, get out of it.
Yeah. No way. How old were you?
So now I would say the journey started when I was about 45, 46, but I didn't realise. And for me, as far as I was concerned, menopause, your period stop, and you get hot flushes. That was all I knew. And the other thing...
Had you ever talked to your mum about her menopause?
A little bit, in that my mum did tell me that she was going through menopause, but it was hot flushes, and then we laughed about it in that I remember she had patches at the time, HRT patches, and she lost her patch and then she found it on my father's backside and thought that was hilarious. But that was it. That was the limit of the conversation. So my hair started falling out. I felt low, my hair started falling out. And I just didn't feel quite right. And it was because of that, I had joint pain but didn't realise what that was. So the main thing was that my hair was falling out and I was like, what's this about? And because my hair isn't that thick anyway, I was like, I can't be losing my hair. So I'm assuming it must be dietary. So I went through the whole taking supplements and dietary thing first. Still, it wasn't changing. I'm getting more symptoms now where I'm waking up anxious every morning, my heart beating 100 miles an hour. And I get out of bed and I can barely put my feet on the floor because my ankles are so sore, my bones in my feet are so sore. But what I was actually pursuing was an answer as to why my hair was falling out. Everything else I was kind of ignoring. And it was only because I didn't relent that they finally said to me, I think you're in perimenopause. And I literally looked at them and just went, shut up. And then I got in the car and cried.
Because it felt like the end, the beginning, an insult.
End. Mm. Like, for me, menopause means you're old. So that's because that was my understanding, you know, that you don't, as a young woman, you don't even have to think about it. It's a million miles away. That doesn't happen to your old. Well, I'm sat here today, probably sort of in excess of, you know, I'm in menopause now, so I've gone through the whole perimenopause thing, and I am not old. So,
no, hell no.
So I was sat in the car crying my eyes out. And then I'm thinking, how am I going to tell Nick? I can't tell Nick that I'm in perimenopause. He's going to think, who's this old lady that I'm with? So the whole thing was horrendous. And I did go to the doctors many, many times. And nobody mentioned perimenopause to me until I insisted. I said, I need to get checked out. And one of the parts of being checked out was I wanted to go and see a gynecologist. My periods were lighter, but they hadn't stopped. And I didn't have hot flushes either. So this was all kind of a real, real shock to me. And then I got put on, I was asked about HRT, and my mum's 78, she looks about 55 or younger. She goes to the gym every single day. She looks incredible. And my mum has been on HRT since her 40s. Granted, going on lower doses.
That's quite unusual.
It is, and she did stop in between during that period where they
people
gave
her. People were worried.
Yeah, she felt great, and then they took it off her, and she was devastated. And then she did go back on it in later life, in her 60s, she went back on a low dose, and she's maintained that. So I already knew about HRT, and I wasn't scared of it in any way, and when I got offered HRT, I was like, yeah, please, let's do it. And they gave me HRT tablets, and I thought, this is it, this is going to be my miracle, here we go, I'm going to find myself.
Yeah.
And I'm taking these tablets, 3 months in, nothing, 6 months in, nothing. I go back, nothing's changing. In fact, my symptoms are getting worse. I'm now becoming really bloated. I am still eating the same. I'm exercising the same. But I've gained like about 15 pounds at this stage, if not more. And so it's getting worse and worse and worse. You know, I hate to use this word, and it's a word that I use incredibly reluctantly, but I was depressed. I was so low. I felt fraud because I'm there telling people how to live a happy life, and yet I feel like absolutely just rock bottom. And so I'll go back to the doctor and I'm like, look, you've given me these tablets, it's not helping. And they said, right, we'll give you stronger ones. So again, I go home thinking, yes, this is it. And honestly, Debbie, the same thing happened. And so I'm maybe 18 months in on HRT and nothing's changed. And I was just devastated. And I just said to Nick, I just don't see what the point is. I can't live like this. I don't recognise who I am anymore. I'm grumpy. I haven't got clarity of mind. I can't remember what I did 5 minutes ago. I'm finding like unusual things in the oven that I've put in for some stupid reason. And I was like, I can't live like this. And Nick, who is just amazing, he sat me down and he said, Eva, you know better. He said, one of our mantras is, there's nothing that can't be fixed. He said, remember, Davina McCall had been to one of our, we do mental health workshops. she'd been to more than one actually, and I remember Davina coming talking to us after we'd finished, and she was just sort of chatting with us. And I remember her telling me about the menopause, and I'm embarrassed to say I did that whole, yeah, it's not me, so, and I'm ages off that, so I'm not really that interested, I'm really sorry for you,
yeah,
but that's never going to happen to me. Obviously, I didn't think it quite so brutally, but if I look back, that is basically what occurred, because unless you're going through it, you don't get it.
Mm-hmm.
And except, remember Davina was mentioning about what she'd been through this journey, and I said, yeah, I do actually. So I texted Davina and I went, Davina, I'm in a really low place. I've never felt as bad. I need some help. I just don't see a way out. I'm lower than I've ever been. I'm considering things I've never considered. And she just texted me back immediately. And she just put, call me now. Picked the phone up to her and I rang her and I went and I spoke to her. And she was just like this little angel that said, right, this is what you're going to do. This is who you're going to contact. Believe me, there are so many things you can do. And she basically, in this conversation, gave me hope and educated me in so many things I'd never known before. And then I went to see somebody privately. And then I mentioned, look, I said, I'm on tablets and it's not helped. She said, that's okay, we'll try something else. There's lots of other things. Some people can't metabolize tablets. So you can try gels, there's sprays, there's patches. And I was like, oh my God, somebody actually understands what I'm going through, and they're just like, yeah, that's fine, we can sort it. And so just that alone made me feel better. And then I did go on to gels, and it was like miracle. Literally within 3 months I could feel I was coming back to myself, clarity of mind, and I was like, wow, this is amazing. And so I was on this fabulous trip of I'm back for a good couple of years, maybe two and a half, 3 years. And then this decline. But as you probably know, you don't recognise it at first because it's
so hard. And I think as women, we're always on a biological journey. And the thing that I have found hardest with any of it is someone saying to you, how do you feel? Mm. And the answer often is, I don't really know. You know, I think you can feel rock bottom, and I don't know how it feels for you. Looking back on that and thinking about that, so obviously you were upset talking about it.
Only because it's like, there will always look, you know, like I said, I've been through so many things in my life, and to think that my head had the darkest of thoughts, Debbie, is just like, it's alien to me. That's not my head. That doesn't belong to me. And that was really frightening, especially when you've got a beautiful husband, you've got beautiful kids, you've got a gorgeous home, you've got a gorgeous life, you've got the best job in the world, and you're thinking these really dark thoughts that are just like, oh, it frightens me to think that I'm such a positive person and that even I could get to that point. So I really feel for all the other women who are there and maybe don't have the same support structure that I have and had at that time. But yeah, so then I was feeling great, and then last year it started to creep up on me again, and I was like, no. And at first I didn't identify with it, and I'm gaining weight again, but I'm making excuses for that. I'm not sleeping as well. I'm making excuses for that. I'm grumpy. I'm justifying that. And then again, boom, hit the floor. And I thought, but what now? And I was like, oh God, I can't believe that this is happening again. And I think I was in such a low point that I didn't even feel able to ask for help at that point. It was a really...
Could you talk to Nick? Or you didn't have the...
Not at first. Not at first.
You couldn't frame it like that.
I was trying to understand my own thoughts, myself first, because I was like, what's happening? Because I'm taking HRT, so I actually thought, I know what I'll do. I'll do another squirt on my gel. I thought I'll have another don't put me estrogen, that'll do it.
And
I'm waiting, nothing. I slap a bit more testosterone on, nothing. And I'm like, God, what's going on? What's going on? Anyway, and then Nick and my kids, who they recognised that something wasn't right. And Nick said, I think it's time you spoke to somebody again. And I said, I think you're right. So made another appointment, and again, like, you know, sort of, you shouldn't, I felt to myself, if you should know better. It's funny, isn't it, when it's you, it's hard, all you see is this. And I spoke to a doctor again, spoke to a gynecologist again, and I explained my whole history. And she said, it's fine, don't worry. Sometimes it just stops, the gel stops being as effective. It's just a trial and error. So we're going to try something else. And so this time I went on to patches. And again, I've had that kind of, oh my God, brilliant, I'm back again. The difference this time, Debbie, and I'd be interested to know what your thoughts are on this. The difference this time is that I've made also some significant lifestyle changes. Because yes, I was going to the gym, but I was treadmill 100 miles an hour. And now I'm more weights, still go on the treadmill, but more stair climber, more incline, using weights, yoga, Pilates. I quit sugar last year. Haven't had sugar, I think, now for 7 months. I will have it in fruit, but I won't have like a just sugar, like white sugar and anything, cakes, whatever. I make my own now using sugar replacement. But I did have to make lifestyle changes. The combination has been a real winner.
I think what's so much that's so interesting and so moving and so difficult about it is it isn't a moment in time. And it does change and it is holistic. And I think the fact that you, even you, and I suppose this is what I hear about me, if even you found it hard to ask for help with your expertise, with your address book, with the work that you do for others, then that just shows how hard it is. And I think some of these changes are to do with accepting that this is going to be our most incredible next chapter, but we have to embrace it. Yeah. And so for me, definitely, you know, I love cardio more than life itself. I don't do it anymore. I lift weight, really? Or everything that you've talked about. Plus, for us, obviously, given better menopause, the supplements, things that I hadn't ever thought about or known about. So it is a lifetime of learning, but I think the emotional consequences of our physical changes of women are just so enormous that that's why conversations like this really matter, because I think people need to see incredible role models like you actually being human and saying, you know, that was my rock bottom and I didn't know what to do, even when you exemplify positive mental attitude and you exemplify support system, because I mean, not everyone could work with their husband for 29 years.
I know.
How do you do it?
I know. A lot of people ask us that question, and it's funny because when we first started working together, a lot of our friends said, well, that's it, the relationship is doomed. I think the reason that we work so well together is down to two things primarily. Number one is incredible communication. We talk about everything, we dissect everything, and we're able to sort of make sense of things that for other people might find a bit difficult. We understand human behavior and we're very open to sort of discussing, look, you just said something, it hurt my feelings, can you just tell me what you meant? And then invariably it'll be, gosh, no, I didn't mean it that way, I meant XYZ. So communication is paramount, and laughter is the second thing. We laugh a lot. And we have the same sense of humour, so that really helps. And Nick has this ability to say that he can just make me laugh. Just like literally, he can say one line and I'll be in fits of laughter. So that really helps as well.
Can we talk about sex before we finish? This isn't necessarily even a personal question, but I think a lot of what we hear from our community is that that becomes ever more important and ever more concerning for women in midlife. When we think about what Better Menopause is doing, one of the big topics for us is around libido and sex drive.
Talk to us about that, what you see, what you hear, how it's been, what, how should we think about that as women?
And it's true, I think, that a lot of women do, you know, the libido just sort of disappears, and they do find that very, very difficult. And it is something that I hear a lot. What I think is really important that we understand is that when we sort of transition into menopause and that happens, that we talk to our partner, that we explain how we feel. And I think what has to change ever so slightly is that as a menopausal woman, it's more about lovemaking, in that your husband, I think, needs to, and you know, fair play to partners out there, they, unless we communicate what we need, they can't react. And maybe we don't realise what we need, but, you know, tenderness, love, sort of stroking, cuddling, these things, so that it actually turns more into love and an action of lovemaking, as opposed to this feeling of, I need to give my partner sex because, you know.
That's the contract.
Yeah. So I think that that's really, really important. And I also think that as a woman, we shouldn't beat ourselves up for being normal. You know, these are all normal consequences of going through menopause. Having said that, and I completely appreciate HRT isn't for everyone, and it's not suitable for everyone. For those that it is, that definitely can help with libido. And for those that can't take it, there are, as I said, there are ways to alter how you approach sex, your relationship, love, connection, so that it is a different, it's a different way around it. But I think we can get there.
When you think about this next chapter for you, as you gracefully continue through midlife, what does it involve? What does Eva version 2, 3, 4 look like?
I think this is, I don't know what version this is. yeah. I'm as ambitious as ever. I am as excited as ever. I completely, Nick and I are on a mission to help make a difference in this world. And so that never changes. I think the difference now, though, is that we've got grown-up children. So we've just been talking about, because your life transitions as your children's lives transition also. So we're in a situation now where both our kids are sort of grown up. So Nick and I are now talking about, okay, so what do we do now, and how can we change our lives? One thing that we have and have always sort of really promoted with that with our kids, you know, on the 1st of January every year without fail, we sit down as a family. We write our individual goals for the year and our family goals, what we'd like to do as a family throughout the year. Just three or four things, you know. We might want to go do some sort of activity. We might want to go and visit some family members. So we've got some activities together. But this year's the first year that we've, in a long time since having kids, that Nick and I have been able to say, we can actually do goals.
What do we want to do for us?
Just us.
Yeah.
So that's, you know, that I think is...
What are they?
Oh,
for 2025.
So we want to go to have a complete out-of-the-way beach holiday, Maldives, somewhere like that, just the two of us, because everywhere we've ever been over the last few years predominantly has been with the children. We want to write another book, but we want to be able to do that maybe away from home, go away for a couple of weeks somewhere very zen. We want to go on a juicing retreat again, because we've not done that for a few years. Last time we went with the kids, so we were kind of more checking in on them, making sure they were enjoying it and they were okay. What else have we got on there? We want to relocate, so we're going to sell up and we're going to move. We want to get our therapy, which we're speaking to the NHS now, get it recognised and be able to share it in the NHS so it benefits more people. I'm sure there's other little things.
I mean,
on
that
there.
Sounds like quite a big year.
Yeah, there's a lot that we have lots of goals. We think both small and large. So that's been the difference in this year, which is very exciting. So I'm looking forward to it.
If you could leave our listeners with one piece of advice, I'm sorry, you must get asked this a lot, but if you could give our listeners who are often women in midlife one piece of advice to feel like themselves again, to move into their next chapter, to live in their power, what would that be?
I think to recognise that as a woman, recognise that not just even being you, but even just being a woman, that you are absolutely incredible and invincible and strong and resilient, because I know that if you're a woman, then you've had challenges in your life, you've had to multitask, you've had to be a part of everybody else's life to help them along. So first of all, really appreciating that as a woman, you are pretty incredible. And then your own personal achievements. Don't ever lose sight of what you've been through, what you've achieved, what you've done. And even those small things, you know, you might walk past the street today and walk past somebody and just smile at them. And that might just make somebody feel that little bit better. So I would say embrace how far you've come, embrace who you are. And I know you said one thing, but my other thing would be is have goals. Because no matter how, they don't have to be huge. You know, it might just be that I'm going to take a walk next week. It might just be that I'm going to pick the phone up to some friend that always makes me laugh. But when we have goals, we have purpose, we have something to look forward to, we have something to celebrate when we've achieved it. And so I think that having little goals, even, is really paramount into helping you to look forward and to give you something to live for.
I love that. Thank you. Thank you so much, Eva. Thank you for leaving us with goals. Thank you for joining me on Grit and Grace.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for listening today, and thanks to our sponsor, The Better Menopause. For more content like this, don't forget to subscribe to our YouTube channel or follow us on socials. See you next time, as I'm joined by more incredible guests here on Grit and Grace with me, Debbie Wascoe.